This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. It's Meera Sivasodi. Today, we're concluding our review of some of the best health advice given in 2013 and kickstarting good health habits in 2014 by taking a look into the windows to our soul, our eyes. Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and retinal surgeon, and Dr. Tara George, retina specialist and eye surgeon, visited our studio a number of times last year, and each time the questions flew in fast and furious. Let's kick things off with one of the eye conditions in our country that's a rather large cause for concern, diabetic retinopathy. Dr. Tara explains. I cut you short just now on diabetic retinopathy. You were saying more, about 40% and more based on statistics in 2006 of those of us 40 and above will be prone to diabetes. Carry on, sorry.
Yes, and we did a study in the Ministry of Health in 2007, and among the diabetic patients attending the Ministry of Health clinic, 20% of them had some form of sight-threatening retinopathy, which means one in five had a risk of visual loss from diabetes. And we want to see these numbers coming down. There are a few factors. One is the diabetes itself, the control and the risk factors. And the other is if you come for screening earlier, you would not reach this stage. We'll be able to treat you earlier.
She stresses how important it is for this disease to be caught in its early stages.
Diabetic retinopathy comes in stages. We call it mild, moderate, severe, and proliferative. Proliferative is once there's bleeding into the back of the eye. Okay. Now, if you come at a stage where it's mild to moderate, with good control of your diabetes, high blood pressure, and cholesterol, you're actually able to reverse these changes. Okay, you can actually get it down to one stage less, which would reduce the chance of losing vision. Mm-hmm. However, if you come at a stage where it's already severe or proliferative, we can't do that. So picking people up at a stage when there are early changes is very good, because we can liaise with the physicians to make sure the control is good to prevent further progression.
Another disease that both doctors focused on was macular degeneration, with an estimated 46,000 of Malaysians beyond the age of 45 years at risk of irreversible blindness due to this condition. It's no wonder.
Macular degeneration, the message is that a lot of people are not aware of this problem until they lose vision in one eye. The reason being the other eye compensates for any visual problems. And the message we want to get across is to use the AMSLA chart. And in fact, at this Retinal Disease Awareness Week, you'll see a huge AMSLA chart.
What chart is that?
It's a chart with grid, with small grids, okay, with a tiny dot in the center. And you look at the chart one eye at a time. That's the message you want to get across.
Is that the one with the alphabets on it? And
no, that's...
You don't use them anymore.
No, we do use them. But that's not sufficient.
Okay.
So this AMSLA chart is something that you can carry with you in your pocket. We have it with magnetic boards. You can stick it on your fridge. So what you do is you just walk by when you're wearing your glasses, close one eye at a time, and look at that chart. Look directly at the chart. And if you see those little checks or grid looking crooked, or there's a patch that's missing, or there's a black patch in the center, that means something's wrong with your macula and you need to seek attention.
Okay.
And usually it's within 72 hours you need to seek attention.
Where do we get this chart?
So when you come for the Retinal Disease Awareness Week, they'll be distributing lots of those charts. And of course, if you visit your doctor, they'll be able to give you one.
However, age alone isn't enough of a determining factor when it comes to diseases that people need to be conscious of. Dr. Kenneth Fong tells us more about a condition that could be seen in young people.
Scotoma is in young people. Most commonly is caused by migraine. Now, migraine is quite a complex condition whereby the blood supply to your brain is transiently cut off. So the blood vessels in the brain go into what we call vasospasm. And this can lead to headaches, vomiting, and blurring of vision. And it usually resolves when the person lies down in a dark room and then closes their eyes, and then the blood supply to the brain opens up again, and the vision improves. And this is not what we call a stroke. This is a very complex condition, and many people suffer from it, particularly young ladies. And certain things can trigger it, like bright light, eating chocolate, cigarette smoke, and just sometimes just general stress. The other rarer conditions are what we call stroke, but again, that's rare in young people. But that shouldn't. I've seen stroke happening in people in 20, 30, so that should have that should not be ruled out. And also, normal things like glaucoma, cataract, and diseases of the retina. All these can happen at all ages.
With both doctors being surgeons, many of the questions that came in tended to focus on laser surgery and the safety of cataract surgery. Dr. Fong addresses that particular issue here.
Cataract operation, the best time to have it is when you are actually symptomatic. So symptomatic means that you are affected by it. Let's say you are driving at night and your vision is worse. So then you should definitely do it. Cataract should not be done for the sake of doing it. I mean, cataract means that the lens itself has become cloudy and hard. There are some groups of patients who have clear lens extraction. So their lenses are then they have an operation to correct for their myopia. That in itself is an operation, but it's between you and the doctor to discuss the risk and benefit. So there is now, I mean, generally speaking, if your vision is deteriorating and it's bad, you should consider cataract because the technology is very safe and the outcomes are now very good.
He does go on to caution, though, that previous surgeries may affect future eye treatments.
Previous surgery would make your eye at risk of glaucoma and also what we call uveitis or inflammation in the eye. So anybody who's had previous surgery with a red eye or symptoms, they should go back to their eye doctor to find out what's happening.
Surgery, of course, isn't always the most immediate option for treatment. Drugs and specifically drug delivery into the eye is also something that people wanted to know more about. Have we moved beyond eye drops? Dr. Tara explains drug delivery methods into the eye and what stands in the way of absorption.
It's not easier, but 70% of drugs that are available are used to delivered through the anterior segment, mm-hmm. which is either eye drops, ointments or gels. The reason why it's that way, it's because it's easier to give it in such a manner. You just put in an eye drop or you put in an ointment. It's much easier for the patient. Mm-hmm. However, there are limitations in delivering eye drops in this way. Now, if you put a drop into your eye, one eye drop is about 50 microliter, okay. One drop. And the volume that your eye can hold, if you lift down your lower lid, you can actually see there's a space, that's where you put your eye drop mm-hmm. in. It can only hold about 30 microliters.
So don't we know, half of it comes off.
That's right.
Half
of it comes out. Now, even out of what goes in, the amount that's absorbed is only about 5%.
Right.
Okay. So that is because of various things that prevent it from being absorbed. As I mentioned, the barriers. Then you have the physiological things, like just the moment something goes into your eye, you start tearing. Mm-hmm. And the tears wash away the drug. Then you have a normal tear drainage. You actually have an opening in the side of your eyelid that drains out your tears into your nose. That's called the lacrimal duct. So if anything goes into your eye, half of it is going to drain out into your nose. There's a way to slow down that drainage by just applying your finger and pressing it to the inner angle of your eye. Mm-hmm. And that would prevent the drops from draining out fast and increases the contact time of the drug with your eye. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the ways we work to make the drug get absorbed a little bit more. But eye drops do have its limitations.
Of course. And as you said, always, most of the time, used to treat anterior segment diseases.
For those wondering when eye drops are sufficient, Dr. Tara gave us the lowdown here, giving us insight into why and when specific medication are prescribed.
Now, if you have a problem in the front of the eye, which we call the anterior segment, mm-hmm. you actually don't need oral medication. And that's something that patients get worried, how come you're just giving them eye drops and no tablets? But if the problem is purely in the front of the eye, even though the eye looks very red, it might be swollen, eye drops are sufficient to treat the front of the eye. However, if the back of the eye is affected, these eye drops don't penetrate till that area. And you give tablets, they go into the bloodstream and through the retinal blood vessels, some of them get into the back of the eye. Mm-hmm. But still, the absorption is not so good. There are new drugs that are said to be better absorbed into the eye. So we do give tablets as well, especially for infections and autoimmune conditions where we know they work to the back of the eye. Most people, especially older people, things like glaucoma are problems that they get as you get older. Not common, but those are problems that older people get. So those are treated still with eye drops. And for older people, they have made ways like, you know, using longer acting drugs, drugs that can be delivered through simplified devices. You know, it's easy to put it into the eye. Mm-hmm. So these are ways that you make it easier to deliver the drugs.
She has a heartening message about the future of treatments for the eye and advice for patients currently taking these medication.
Over the last 10 years, we've seen leaps and bounds in treatment to the eye. The message is that our eye drops are still important. They still have a role. If you're prescribed a medication, you need to know what you're given, why you're given it, and be compliant to it.
Dr. Tara also discusses the importance of early and effective treatment for retinal conditions, a theme that stretches throughout the year.
We need to address these problems early. And if the retina gets damaged, it's actually nerve tissue, so it heals with scarring, and that scarring will impair vision.
This is the last in our series of reviews of 2013's health advice. Hopefully some of this will be helpful as we kickstart 2014. Coming up, more sage advice from our eye specialists, Dr. Kenneth Fong and Dr. Tara George, here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon, this is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. Today we're summarising the best eye advice we heard in 2013 from consultant ophthalmologist and retinal surgeon Dr. Kenneth Fong and retinal specialist and eye surgeon Dr. Tara George. Which is where the issue of screening comes in. Whilst they are widespread throughout the country, Dr. Fong does say that they aren't strictly necessary for all. It's more a matter of knowing when you need to go for such a screening, as well as understanding your own needs.
I mean, there are certain groups of people that should have regular eye checks. Look, starting from children, all children should have their eyes tested from the age of 3 onwards, because if they have need to wear glasses, they should be encouraged to wear it so that they don't get what we call lazy eyes or amblyopia. If one eye is very short-sighted and the other eye is normal, then the short-sighted eye may become lazy. So that's important in children. And secondly, they can go for annual checks. That can be what optometrists or what eye doctors. And as you get older, above the age of 40, we should have what we call eye pressure checks for conditional glaucoma. Glaucoma is a condition where your pressure in the eye is high and it comes without any warning. So an eye pressure check is very important, much like how we have our blood pressure checked.
And does the frequency differ with gender or demographics? You know, is there an issue there?
Not really. Most of the time, it depends on the family history, because there are two particular eye conditions that are strongly correlated with the family history. One is glaucoma, and the other is a condition called AMD, macular degeneration, and we've talked about it before. But just to remind the listeners, AMD stands for age-related macular degeneration. It's an aging disease of your retina. And the only way to detect it is to get a retinal screen. So you need to see an eye doctor who will then examine the back of your eye and tell you whether you have signs of this condition. Basically, all diabetic patients, as we've said, patients above the age of 40 need to have the eye pressure check. Patients above the age of 50 need to have their retina check for AMD. And anyone with a history of glaucoma, AMD, should have their eyes checked at an earlier age because they're at higher risk of those diseases. In fact, now in America, they have commercial genetic testing for AMD, where they take a swab from your cheek. You do it yourself. You take the swab from your cheek, put the cotton bud in a package and send it off. And 2 weeks later, you'll get a detailed genetic analysis on your risk of AMD in the future.
His message on the matter was succinct and simple.
Screening needs to be done with a purpose in mind. Not screening for the sake of screening, but be aware of what diseases we're looking out for. So for me, when I screen a patient, I'm very specific. I look for glaucoma, I look for AMD. If they're diabetic, I'm looking for diabetic retinopathy. One of the diseases we don't need to screen for is cataract, because it's a very gradual onset disease, and delayed cataract can be treated at any stage. But these three diseases, we need to treat them early to prevent blindness.
Of course, with eye health, as with anything else, prevention is better than cure. While I wonder whether not wearing sunglasses is a bad idea, Dr. Tara's idea of basic retinal care involves much more.
I don't wear sunglasses.
Yeah.
Am I in trouble?
Not really. They're slightly more important things than sunglasses.
Okay.
I think on top of the list would be smoking. Okay, smoker.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, so for AMD, smokers have a 3 times higher chance of developing AMD. And if you stop smoking, it's actually a modifiable risk factor. You can reduce your chance of developing AMDs. In fact, that's the only modifiable risk factor in AMD.
Okay.
The other thing is to eat healthy. You know, the vitamins do help the eye.
As with so many other aspects of our health, nutrition is key. Dr. Kenneth Fong knows this better than most, having co-written a book with dietitian Goh Chui Hung titled Food and Your Eyes. Going beyond just eating carrots and hoping for the best, Dr. Fong explains the 3 main areas of nutrition that the book examines.
I think the general message we wanted to get across was that you have to be a diet rich in antioxidants, mm-hmm. And the what we call the carotenoids, the pigments called lutein and zeaxanthin, and the latest one was omega-3 fatty acids, omega-3 fish oil. So these are the 3 key nutritional things we focused on in the book.
Both Dr. Fong and Chui Hung also explain other sources of nutrition for the eyes.
The American Health Association actually has changed their recommendation from having 3 eggs per week. Now they say you can have 1 a day. So that goes to show that, you know, eggs are a safe and healthy protein option, because it's actually a high quality protein that one egg gives you.
Okay.
Yeah. And that lutein that you mentioned, it's actually what we call a carotenoid, a pigment that cannot be found in our body. So it's an essential part of our retina, the lutein, and we can only get it from diet.
Okay.
So having a high source of lutein will help protect your macula from diseases like macular degeneration.
Okay. And I noticed there's a focus on the patient's age-related macular degeneration in the book. Why is that?
Age-related macular degeneration is the most common cause of blindness in patients above the age of 50 in the developed world. And we've found that over long-term studies, we showed that dietary supplements can help slow down the progression of or prevent this disease called AMD.
Okay.
So that many places around the world, they actually make special supplements for AMD patients where you can. These are very high doses of antioxidants and zinc,
as well as the specific foods that could assist with specific conditions.
Foods rich in omega-3 fatty acids are good for dry eyes. This is what we mentioned about in our book as well, because dry eye is a result of your dysfunction of the oily tear film.
Yeah.
There's lack of the healthy oils, and the omega-3 helps replenish the healthy oils in our tear film.
A recurring question is whether we need to be incorporating specific supplements and multivitamins into our diet, or whether we can get it all from what we put on our plate. Ms. Goh has an appropriately balanced view on the matter.
Well, I think that the first thing would be if you compare a plate full of colourful vegetables and, you know, your salad dish, and compare one plate with 2 supplement pills there. I think the vegetables will win hands down, because it's a colourful platter, it looks more appealing, so it's more exciting taking a plate of vegetables, colourful vegetables, as opposed to taking 2 miserable-looking supplements. But I'm not against supplements, because there are cases where, for example, if a person wants to increase their omega-3 intake, but they just cannot take fish, or they just don't like the taste of fish. So there's a role for fish oil supplements there, because that way they can make sure they get enough fish oils in their diet.
But I'm sure there's a lot of benefits in taking freshly cooked vegetables or cooked fish, am I correct? As opposed to the omega-3 fish oil.
Yeah.
Because it's fresh, it is, you know, straight from the source.
And it's more bioavailable, so it's easily absorbed and it's utilized by the body.
And with any luck, that should give all of us enough to pay attention to our eye health and go on our way to a healthier, more clear-sighted 2014. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.